This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Vantage Health Plan. We'll have all the election stuff as we move along this morning, and there is much to talk about. But there are other things happening in the world, and in our community, we are on the cutting edge of a lot of advances in many areas. One of those people on the forefront of health is Dr. Tiffany Stewart, who's been with the Pennington Biomedical Research Center for 23 years, more than half her life. And she has developed a health, fitness, and stress management app exclusively for the military. And we're going to talk with her. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And this is an important part of our world. And how did Pennington get involved in it?
Well, first, good morning, and thank you for having me. I've been doing this work for a couple of decades now, and I am a clinical psychologist by trade, and we have tried to help people sort of train and evolve and change their health behaviors for the long haul of life for many years. And we began working with the military in around 2002, right after 9/11, of obviously a very stressful time, and I'm sure everyone is aware that we've been in protracted warfare since then, and our soldiers have undergone tons of stress, but also mm-hmm. threats to their health. And we saw an opportunity to help them primarily with technology. So this is really considered translational science, if you will, taking science out of the lab into groups that need it. And so we started working with active duty soldiers around 2004. And at that time, not everybody was even using the internet very much. So now we carry our whole world in our hands and our phone, and that work has evolved since then. So we started out trying to help soldiers sleep better, exercise more effectively, eat healthier foods, and in the last 18 years, that's evolved to where we are now, which is, you know, as everyone is aware, we are in unprecedented time in perpetual uncertainty and stress, mm-hmm. and everyone is sort of unsure about what's going to happen next. And, you know, soldiers have a lot to teach us about this. They have, you know, managed civilian soldier work life along with their duties.
All right. Well, the number to call in our time with Dr. Stewart is 877-217-5757, and you're a psychologist by training.
Yes.
And here you are recommending things that go way beyond the mind, but the mind and body often go together. If you have a body that's not fit, it affects the mind, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And
why don't we talk more about that?
Sure. So what we've realized over the course of time is getting people to change their health behaviors in a vacuum essentially doesn't work. So if you can imagine trying to change your health behaviors amidst a pandemic, amidst election unrest, amidst much stress, loss of jobs, mm-hmm. food insecurity, you have to take our lives into account when we're trying to be healthier. And so what this app is designed to do is meet people where they are and help them not only meet their health goals, right. but in the context of what's going on in their lives. So we have chosen to take all of the evidence-based information and science that we've done over the last 20 or so years and deploy stress management, mindfulness, essentially resilience training. How do we come out of all this and be more durable for the future and maintain our good health habits through it all?
Now, you've revealed to me that you're a former gymnast and you practice what you preach. A lot of gymnasts and other athletes have injuries that crop up later in life from the stress that they put on their joints, and you seem to be walking the walk. But in Louisiana in particular, we have an unfit population, generally speaking. And Pennington has been out there as one of the world leaders in stressing reduction in weight, physical fitness. But it seems that there are some acolytes, but for the most part, people do what they want to do. Why do we not get in better shape in this country?
Well, you know, that's a very complicated question because, for example, specifically obesity is a disease. We know that there are many complicating factors to that outcome for many people, biology, genetics, life obstacles. And so this work is aiming to tackle some of that by looking at the context of what folks are coping with and trying to treat them and help them in the context of all that. And just referring back to my gymnastics history, you know, you're right. So gymnastics is definitely a sport that produces a lot of injury. That means limitation to physical activity, lots of surgery, and figuring out how to hone your health for the long haul, right? Because a lot of times people are trying to do crash diets, or they're doing things for the short term, very focused on short term goals. And what we need is an approach that brings a whole health approach, mental and physical, like you said, the mind and body integrated for this longer haul of life. So if you want to be playing with your children outside or running around with your grandchildren much later, what do we need to do to optimize our body to have that experience and be healthy?
And you're using an LSU Lyft grant to create a version of this app that was designed for the military for the civilian market. How will people like me have access to this?
Absolutely. So in about a year's time, it'll be in the App Store for everyone to use. And we've taken what we've learned from soldiers who may be deployed in Afghanistan, Iraq, all over the world, or at home with family using this app and studying that behavior to see why, what might best influence our use as civilians. You know, one of the challenges we have is many of these commercial apps we have out there and gadgets and things pushing you information at a 24-hour, always-on environment is that it's not science-based. This information could come from anywhere in some cases. And so one of the unique things about this is that Pennington is bringing science to the community directly with an app that not only addresses nutrition, fitness, and sleep in the body, but also addresses the mental health struggle we have to go along with that.
Well, when people come to Pennington, they're at various stages of health. Some are in good shape and want to get in better shape, and others are in lousy shape and want to get in good shape. So you work with different kinds of people, and some people, of course, get frustrated. They want immediate results, and it generally doesn't happen that way. It's an incremental thing. How do you tell people that, you know, if you stick with the program, it's going to get better?
That's a great question. So this program and technology can be for your most advanced performer, or it can be for your very, very, very beginner. And the way that we do that is instead of always focusing on that end goal where somebody wants to get way down the line, we take what I call a function over form approach. So instead of looking at that bottom line or that appearance or whatever it is you have in your head, we celebrate the incremental wins on behaviors. You know, have I changed this habit for the last few weeks? Have I walked a little further than I did a few weeks ago? Did I sleep better? Those are the real successes.
Bill Bryan, since he just sent me this, I guess he wants me to read it on the air. One of my friends and a fine lawyer, but a guy who admittedly needed to lose a pound or two, he says, went to the cardiologist Monday, down to 242. 40 waist from 48 a year ago, no surgery, old-fashioned way, ride 3 miles a day on my bike, eating healthy. Is that a good program based on what what Bill's saying as far as his results?
Sounds pretty good to me. You know, the best program is one that you can sustain and you're not miserable every day. So, you know, you got to have the joy and the daily satisfaction as well. So sometimes smaller goals per day are better. But it's all about consistency.
Well, what are some of the big no-nos?
Big no-nos. You know, for many years I treated eating disorders as well. Still focus on that a little bit. Big no-nos are trying to restrict intake all day long and maybe have a meal at night. Big no-nos are setting unrealistic goals, not smart incremental goals, but these huge goals that maybe you want to get to in the future. And you know, a lot of people lose hope and will quickly with all or nothing thinking. You have to celebrate the small wins and, like I said, make incremental change. So one of the big no-nos is all or nothing thinking. Oh, I messed up today. I might as well just give it all up and throw in the towel. Every day is a fresh new day to start over.
If somebody has a bad day, sometimes that bad day elicits another bad day and one after that. But how do you get back in the game and realize that we all have a bad day every now and then?
Absolutely. So especially during these unprecedented times, I think people have had a lot of bad days strung together. mental stress, very little sleep. I understand those things. The idea that we can ground ourselves and be sort of the center, the calm of our own storm, is actually a trainable skill. And getting into that center of the storm and observing the chaos around you from afar tends to help us reset our mind and start over the next day. Every day is a new day of opportunity to change and hone your habits. So it's all is not lost.
Well, we look forward to having you back. Tiffany Stewart, 23 years Dr. Stewart's been at the Pennington Center. Native of Lake Charles, grew up in Florida, came back to LSU where she got her PhD in psychology. And we look forward to hearing from you. Quickly, for those who'd like more information about what we've discussed, best way to do it is?
Go to the Pennington website and keep checking. I'm sure that when we release the app to the public, you will know about it.
All right. We'll talk more then, I hope. We'll be back to talk about the election. Oh, yes, there was one a couple of nights ago, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And in just a bit, we'll hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate. I'm sure he'll have many cogent things to say about the election. But right now, if you'd like to chime in, just you and me, that's fine. And if things go according to plan, we'll also hear from Aisha McClendon, a Dillard University graduate, who was involved intricately in getting out the vote across the country. And we did have a big turnout. By the end of the counting, we should have 150 million Americans who cast votes in this election. 150 million. Joe Biden, right now, with still some votes to go, he has 72,187,000 votes, and Donald Trump has 68,691,000. So Biden is ahead right now by 3.5 million votes. And by the time the votes are counted in California and in other urban areas where the counting is slow, and in some smaller states like Alaska where the counting is slow, by the way, there's no real claim about the slow counting in Alaska, but it's very slow there too. But by the time all is said and done, Joseph Robinette Biden will most likely win this race by well over 5 million actual votes, which will mean he'll have a bigger margin of victory than did Barack Obama over Mitt Romney. Romney lost by just under 5 million, but Biden's going to end up getting perhaps a 6 million vote margin of victory. But as we know, right now, if everything broke right for the president, he could still win this election. But at this point, it looks like Joe Biden is likely to win Nevada, possibly going to win Pennsylvania, and may even win Georgia. And if he won all three of those, he would have 306 electoral votes. 877-217-5757. And as mentioned, Aisha McClendon is with us for a few minutes, and she was responsible for trying to get out the vote, particularly among African Americans. She is a Dillard University graduate. And how did that effort go, Aisha? Was it successful?
Yes. Hello. It's so nice to be with you today, Jim. You know, we are really excited about all of the amazing things that we did during this election, especially in Louisiana. You know, yes, I went to Dillard, but I know that there's many other historically Black colleges in the state. It's such a rich state for HBCUs. So, you know, it was great. We think that we definitely turned out many people who were not planning to go vote. We helped them create plans by going to our website at voteamerica.com. We helped them register online up until the deadline, sent them reminders with some of our millions of texts that we sent out. So, you know, I personally think it went really well.
Again, 877-217-5757. If you'd like to get in with Aisha McClendon, you can hear she is a fireball, and getting people out to vote is not an easy thing to do. But this time around in Louisiana, Kyle Ardoin, our Secretary of State, says the turnout was 69.4%. That's better than it has been in years, but it was over 67% 4 years ago, and some thought it would be even higher. And, of course, Donald Trump won in Louisiana with 58% of the votes. He got 58% last time, and Bill Cassidy got over 59% of the votes. But in New Orleans and Baton Rouge in particular, those areas went for Biden, and they did not give a majority of the votes to Bill Cassidy. So by and large, even though those elections did not go well, do you think you really got out the votes in the two biggest cities in our state?
I do think that we did because, you know, we know that there were a lot of new voters that came out this elections cycle. You know, we're not, let me just say that Vote America is nonpartisan. So we are just trying to get people to vote. And we know that if we can get first-time voters to vote and then go back to two more elections, no matter who's on the ticket, that they will be voters for life, which is really one of the things that we are working towards at Vote America.
But in Louisiana, well over 90% of the people voted Democratic on Tuesday. And it's just a reality. Joe Biden got just over 15% of the white vote. Do you have an explanation for this disparity, Aisha?
We know that in most cycles, especially, that black women are definitely voting. And, you know, I'll be honest, I don't have an explanation on why he only got that percentage. I do, and I speak for, you know, my work has been for minority groups, African American, Latinx, which has definitely increased this cycle. It's definitely something we're looking into. And as we grow our organization, it's something that we will keep on the top of our minds as we figure out what our programming will look like for next cycle.
Now, in early voting, Aisha, in Louisiana, 30% of the vote was African-American, which mirrors the population in our state. But usually it's a bit less than that. How was it on Election Day? Have you been able to determine that?
So we know that on Election Day, African-Americans, we like to go to the polls. We like to go, and while we had a high early vote, we know that the numbers were a little bit lower than what we would have wanted. We haven't gotten the final numbers yet, but we know they're a little lower than what we wanted, and it definitely gives us room for improvement for 2 years when we come back to Louisiana and help with your next election. But, you know, we like the polls. We don't do early voting. We like to go to the polls. And so that's essentially what we want to do. No matter what's going on while we were, even though there was a pandemic, we knew that we needed to create plans and be prepared to wait in lines. And so that's definitely what we told people to do.
And in 2 years, we'll have a U.S. Senate race. John Neely Kennedy will presumably be running for re-election at age 71. And his possible challenger will be the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards. If that happens, that would be quite a race.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of my family is from North Louisiana, right outside of Alexandria in a small town called Jonesville, Louisiana. And so they've been talking about that for a while. And, you know, I think it could be an amazing race. We're definitely going to need to ignite people and start registering people now. You know, we don't stop just because there was an election on Tuesday. As we can see, we're still waiting to see who the president is going to be. So we need to keep registering people and get people, make sure that people know what their issues are. They don't need to just vote because the person on the ballot identifies with their political affiliation. They need to vote for their values and vote for their families. And so that's really one of the things that we are pushing as we get ready for the next set of elections.
Well, in Louisiana, Donald Trump won by almost 400,000 votes, and a listener, Teresa in Goodwood, asked why Adrian Perkins didn't do better. He got 19% of the votes against Bill Cassidy. He received 59% of the votes. Why did Mayor Perkins, who on paper is a dream candidate, why did he not get more votes? Have you looked at that?
You know, I have been looking at that, and I think that there's many reasons why he didn't get more votes. I think he started off a lot later than the other candidate. I think that because of that, he wasn't able to raise the same amount of money. You know, when I look at the ways that we engage in African-American communities, it's definitely a lot of one-on-one, which we were not able to do this election cycle because of the virus. And I think all of those things really impacted him. But, you know, I don't think he's going anywhere. I think that you will see him again in another race and doing some more amazing things for the great state of Louisiana.
Right now, it appears that Joe Biden is on the brink of winning the election. What does that mean, if anything, for the country at large?
You know, I think that no matter who wins, who we actually declare as the winner of this election, I think that it shows us that we have a lot of work to do and a lot of healing to do, and we need to figure out ways to stop the divide no matter who wins. And I think there's just so much work, and I am so blessed and honored to have the opportunity to do that this cycle and beyond.
Aisha McClendon, graduate of a great university in New Orleans, also the alma mater of Rose Hudson, president of the Louisiana Lottery. Dillard University. Aisha is National Outreach Director of Vote America. It's been a pleasure. First time guest, and let's hope you make an encore appearance very soon, Aisha.
I will. So nice to meet you. Thank you so much for having me today.
All right, and best of luck in your endeavors. And when we return, we'll talk more about election 2020 nationally and in Louisiana with Mark Ballard, the sage of Louisiana correspondence. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate, the newspaper of record in Louisiana. Advocate/Picayune now. Mark is here to talk about the election and more. And again, if you'd like to call, 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard, you pretty much called it. You did call it. Donald Trump won handsomely in Louisiana, as did Senator Cassidy. And collectively, when we calculate all-time vote-getters in the history of our state now, Donald Trump received more votes than anybody in the history of our state, and Bill Cassidy is number two. He received more votes than any Louisiana candidate in the history of our state, and both of them received over 1.2 million votes. Trump got 58%, Cassidy got 59%, but in East Baton Rouge Parish, Joe Biden got 56% of the votes, and Bill Cassidy only received 45% of the votes. So we are a blue dot in a red sea where we do this show, but Louisiana continues to be a ruby red state.
Indeed it does. The cities, for the most part, the cities and now apparently some of the surrounding suburbs are turning blue, but the rest of the state where most of the people live are still ruby red. And I think that what we saw, I thought it was going to be a little closer, you know, that they were going to win, but not by such staggering majorities. But I think that the early vote, the mail-in ballots, energized Republicans as well as Democrats.
On both sides. But in Louisiana, we like to vote, and the turnout was only about 2% higher than it was in 2016. But we didn't have as many third-party candidates on the presidential side, which explains why Biden got 40 and Hillary Clinton only got 38% 4 years ago. But in the Senate race, a listener earlier commented that Adrian Perkins was a disappointment, receiving under 20% of the votes. It was Cassidy 59, Perkins 19, and the number three person in the race, surprisingly, was Derek Champ Edwards, a Democrat who got 229,698 votes. He did have the backing, I understand, of some African-American leaders like Senator Fields, but it also helps in Louisiana if you're a Democrat and your name is Edwards, it helps to get votes.
Well, he also had the backing of Cedric Richmond, so I guess the two top African-American leaders in the state backed Derek Edwards, who has run
before
several times before, so this was not his first run. And I think with that hurt Adrian Perkins, also kind of a late start that he got, that also sort of hurt him, because he was doing, you know, attack ads on Cassidy in the last couple of days before the election. That should have been done back in, you know, July and August.
Right, and in North Carolina, for example, where the Democrats apparently have lost a U.S. Senate seat. They didn't have it, but they thought they were going to take it. Cunningham lost to Tillis, but it's very close, unlikely to flip. But a record $300 million was spent on that race, the most expensive non-U.S. presidential race in history. In North Carolina, a state about twice the size of Louisiana, $300 million. And that brings us to 2022, with the Senate up for grabs and presumably President Biden in office. There is speculation that John Bel Edwards will ramp up and run against John Kennedy. And if that were to happen, Mark, a lot of media people would be happy about the advertising, because you can bet that would be a race that would generate over $100 million in activity and maybe more.
If indeed that's what the governor decides to do, yeah, it would be an intense race, and because he has shown that he can run and win statewide in a red state, and John Kennedy is a he attacks, and so it should be kind of an entertaining race, if nothing else.
Oh, it would be one for the ages, I think. Contrasts in many ways. And a generational contrast. John Bel Edwards is only 54 years old, and John Kennedy is about to turn 69. So by the time they would run in 2 years, Edwards would be 56 and Kennedy would be 71. But John Kennedy is one who ran three times before he won a U.S. Senate seat. And this time around, he will be tough to beat. Incumbency is hard to ignore, and I think John Bel Edwards will factor all that in. But the one thing that would happen for him is that even if he lost, he's still the governor for another year, and he probably would not be embarrassed. If he lost, it wouldn't be a rout, so it wouldn't tarnish his legacy, even if he were to be defeated. So I think all the Democratic operatives will be pushing him, if he can be pushed. He's a guy who pretty much has a mind of his own, as we found out. He rejected Donald Trump's offer to become a Republican and win by acclamation. But he will be persuaded, shall we say, to try to get in this race.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Because you're looking at, you know, what other Democrat has a kind of a statewide following? I mean, other than the Landrews. I guess Cleo Fields. I mean, who else?
And they could They could not win statewide right now.
And they could. And they have proven that they could not win statewide. So, I mean, who else on the Democratic side can jump up and do that?
There's nobody other than a personality of some type. Maybe if Shaquille O'Neal got in the race, it would be a. And I'm not kidding either. It would be a race, but I don't think that's going to happen. And John Bel Edwards is the guy the Democrats will be saying, look, you're term limited. What do you have to lose? And we'll raise $100 million for you. But they raised $100 million trying to knock off Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, and he won by 10 points. Mark, wasn't even close.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be a closer race, frankly. But, again, South Carolina is very much like Louisiana. It's very it has blue cities, but it's overwhelmingly ruby red, and I think that's what saved Lindsey Graham.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Mark Ballard. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. Called some time ago. Like I said, Trump was going to win, but he didn't win, but he did really, really great. What we saw, and we're in a rural parish, Opelousas, what we saw was great turnout at the polls. 6 o'clock in the morning, the polls, the lines were had never seen before. And I've been voting since I was 18. Just want to let you know what's going on in the rural parish.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate you, Paul. And Donald Trump didn't do that well in the urban areas, but he did very well in rural areas. And, Mark, I was looking at some of the numbers today, and I knew Trump would win big in New Orleans, but I didn't know it would be by 121,000 votes. Excuse me, Biden. Biden won by 121,000 in New Orleans Parish, which exceeds what John Bel Edwards did. And without that, it would have been just a huge rout. Biden won by about 27,000 votes in East Baton Rouge. But to show how quickly that can be evaporated, in Livingston Parish, and I think I have the numbers right, and I'm going to recheck them right now, in the presidential race in Livingston Parish, neighboring Baton Rouge, of course, highly conservative. And in Livingston, these were the numbers in the presidential race. It was Donald Trump, 54,870. Joe Biden, 9,249.
Wow.
Trump won by 45,621 votes in Livingston Parish. It's hard to make that up. For example, Biden won by 27,000 votes in Baton Rouge, East Baton Rouge, the largest parish in the state. But you put the two together, and it's a net minus 18,000.
Yes. And that's why we're a ruby red state this week.
It is.
What I did notice in this election was that the African American vote, if you looked at 2016 in predominantly African American precincts, the turnout was about 49%. And this time the turnout was over 65%, and some places closing in on 70%. But still, we're talking about these are minority-majority precincts, and the bulk of the state is Republican.
All right, and another listener, this is Hal in Monroe, saying, how did Biden do in Jefferson Parish, which was won twice by John Bel Edwards? Edwards, believe it or not, and last time he won big in Jefferson. Well, in Jefferson on Election Day this time, Donald J. Trump, 105,890 to Joe Biden, 84,438. So Jefferson went back to its Republican roots for this race, supporting Donald Trump. And Trump,
there's a difference. Trump is popular there, but there's a difference in these races in that, you know, John Bel Edwards was running on local issues, and the presidential races are on these kind of partisan wedge national issues, and on those issues, the Republicans tend to do well in parishes like Jefferson. But I think what you need to look at Jefferson Parish was that it was the foundation of the Republican Party in Louisiana, and now it's turning more and more purple.
We're visiting with Mark Ballard of The Advocate, and we will go to the phone lines in our last segment with him. We've got some folks who'd like to talk with him. 877-217-5757. There is a line open. But right now, with four states still undecided, the Associated Press has the tally. Joe Biden, 264. Donald Trump, 214. Biden can win the election if he carries any one of the four, Nevada, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, or Georgia. Trump has to win all four. He has to win every one of them to win. But right now, with 214 electoral votes, Donald John Trump, 132 of those have come from 10 Southeastern Conference states. He has once again swept the SEC, and we're waiting on Georgia. And the amount of victory for Trump in the 11 SEC states right now, 4,660,616 for Donald Trump in the SEC. And nationally, Joe Biden is going to win this election nationally by about 6 million votes. So think about it. About an 11 million vote margin between Biden and Trump in 39 states, and then turn it around almost 5 million for Trump in the 11 SEC states. We'll talk more with Mark after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Matt Doyle and Lauren Hickman producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. And Mark Ballard, our Thursday tradition continues with the Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Please be as brief as possible in your remarks to Mark. Let's start with Jim and Walker. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I am curious why you're not, how do I say this? Why you were unsure of why there was such a disparity between the white vote and the black vote going towards Trump, when what was the percentage of the white vote that went towards Duke?
Well, that is a consideration, Jim. And David Duke received 671,000. And nine votes in 1991. And Mark, you know, even though you can really have a hard time finding any of those voters, some of them are still voting in our state. And they're probably not voting for Joe Biden.
We can easily say that. But the disparity is mathematical. You can see it in how few African Americans are in the Republican Party, and how blue the cities are, where there are African American majorities, and what the And what the polls are showing is that 85% to 90% of the African American vote is going for Democrats. And that, I mean, mathematically, that's it. I mean, there it is.
or more in the state of Louisiana. And unfortunately, for the Democratic Party, the white vote is almost non-existent for Democrats in many of these races. A listener asks about Lafayette Parish, which is the most conservative big city in our state. And I'm going to pull up Lafayette Parish. And in Lafayette Parish, Donald Trump, 72,518. Joe Biden, 39,685. So a margin of about 33,000 votes in almost 2-1 in Lafayette Parish, Trump over Biden. But that's the only big city with that kind of a disparity. Let's go to Tricia in Lafayette. Tricia, good morning. You're on with Mark. Hi, Tricia.
Hi, yes. I was wondering, why don't the Democrats organize and nominate one candidate to challenge the Republican incumbent? It seems like it's just so watered down, and the Republican is going to win every time.
All right. Well, if all the Democrats had gotten all the votes that didn't go to Bill Cassidy, that still would only be 40% and change, about 41%. But, Mark, if they had coalesced behind a single candidate, it probably would have been better.
Yes, it would have. It wouldn't have split the message. It wouldn't have split the vote. And, you know, 40% looks like, you know, almost there, kind of, as opposed to, what was it, 19%?
19%, yeah.
Yeah, and why they don't do that is, you know, the same problem that the Republicans have, in that you can't, this is America, and if you mm-hmm. want to run for office, you can. You know?
And we've got
well,
to
one see. Thing that that John Bel Edwards did from the very get-go was to eliminate and marginalize Democratic candidates when he ran for governor. That was like the first thing out of the gate that he did was to say, you know, I am the Democratic candidate. And so he didn't have to kind of put up with that inner fight before getting to the Republican.
David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, the indecency of President Trump is unbelievable. For him to go to court and try to stop a perfectly legal vote count in Pennsylvania, where I'm sure many of those ballots were mailed in by people who served in the military, and no one in the Trump family ever served. The mendacity and the indecency of this man is so shameful. It's a disgrace.
All right. Well, it is curious, because Trump is probably on his way out, how the Democratic delegation has been largely quiet, even now, Republican delegation, in criticizing Donald Trump. We don't hear Senator Cassidy or Senator Kennedy saying a harsh word about the president prematurely declaring victory, and also saying that there's voter fraud when there is no evidence to indicate that.
Yes, but on the other hand, with it, a record number of people going out to vote, and that the vote is ending up being so close, it shows that he has substantial support, that this was not an aberration. This is a substantial support among a large, maybe majority, well, maybe not majority, but very close to majority of the voters in this country. So, I think what this election showed is that he wasn't an aberration. He is the candidate, the spokesman for a large group of people in this country.
And the election is close enough that I suspect he will immediately ramp up and start running for president once again. Gustavo, who is a fan of the president in Goodwood, says, welcome to the socialist Sodom and Gomorrah, previously known as the United States of America. It'll be sad to see this country, writes Gustavo, become a totalitarian state run by corrupt oligarchs. That from Gustavo. Let's go back to Goodwood and Reed in Goodwood, old Goodwood. Hi, Reed. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, gentlemen. I think we're seeing a Brutus and Caesar situation in the Republican Party, and it'll be interesting to see what the voters, how they respond to their party abandoning their candidate.
All right. Well, the Republican Party didn't do so badly, and at least not nearly as badly as thought. They gained a few seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. They didn't get wiped out in state races. And in the Senate, there's only a net gain of one right now for the Democratic Party, Mark. So even though Trump appears to be on his way out the gate, the Republican Party is still very much alive and well.
And it's the Trump Republican Party that's alive and well. And I kind of think that what we're going to be seeing is kind of a reanalysis of the Democratic Party when this is all said and done. It'll be if Joe Biden gets those final, the final state that he needs so that he can become president, it's going to be because of moderates, and there's going to have to be some sort of realignment between moderates and those who espouse the more far-left platforms, whereas the Republicans have adapted the far-right platform and have done so in much more unity than the Democrats have.
All right. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, you're on Talk Louisiana.
You were talking about John Vail possibly running against Kennedy for Senate. I was thinking, looking a little further down the road, maybe he should hold off on that and finish his term out, then run against Cassidy in 2026. What do you you two think about that?
All right. Well, if he waits that long, he probably would be looking at running for governor in 2027, which he could do. My guess is if he's going to run for the Senate, he'll run against John Kennedy. And let's face it also, Mark, he has more aversion to Kennedy than he does to Cassidy. Those two have locked horns in not so pleasant ways.
Well, and Cassidy is more moderate, if I can say that. I mean, he's more willing to reach across the aisle than Kennedy has been as a senator. The other thing that I think we need to look at is that that Governor Edwards is a strong administrator, and we haven't really heard much about his political philosophies other than as they apply to the administration of government. So therefore, running for the Senate is mostly a philosophical and partisan type of campaign, you know, where you stand on these national issues. And it's a little bit out of Edwards' wheelhouse.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Mark.
Yeah. Can you draw any correlation between the voter totals in the SEC states compared to nationwide? And the fact that, for example, LSU has shiny, new, and expensive athletic facilities and a library that's fallen apart.
All right. Well, there is something about the culture. It goes way beyond anything else. But the culture in the South has embraced Trump. It's, in many cases, a NASCAR culture, a World Wrestling Federation culture. And Donald Trump, Mark, is the only president of the United States who have ever been inducted into the World Wrestling Federation Hall of Fame.
I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised.
So, yeah, I think the culture is such that if you're white in the South, Donald Trump is a bit of a folk hero, and that's evident at these rallies, and it's also evident in turnout. The Democrats talk a lot about turnout, but the Republicans do it better, because if everybody turned out, I think the margin would have been greater, and Trump still has an outside shot, an extreme outside shot, of winning. Another listener wanted to know about the amendments. We've talked about those with you. Amendments 4 and 5 failed. Was that a surprise, Mark?
No, I didn't think it was a surprise because particularly 5. There was a multi-million dollar campaign against it, and I think that the state's voters have shown that they're not really embracing the tax breaks for big corporations that our legislature seems to enjoy giving out, and so I wasn't that surprised to see the ITEP change actually fail.
And another listener notes that one, of course, passed almost 2-1, the abortion amendment, but it lost in East Baton Rouge Parish. It did not receive a majority of the votes, so that's curious.
Indeed, but I think that it also has to do with us being more of a Democratic type of a platform city.
No doubt about it. Mark, please be safe. We need you. One of the great journalists in America who does his work for the Baton Rouge and New Orleans and Parts Unknown Advocate. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Have a nice week.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support. Stay tuned.